This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The new remake of Ocean's 11 opened today. We'll have a review of it a little later, but first we talk about the stars of the original Ocean's 11, the Rat Pack.
This is our objective, Las Vegas, Nevada. Mission, to liberate millions of dollars. These are the five casinos we hit. Sahara, Riviera, Desert Inn, the Sands, and the Flamingo. 8 hours, New Year's Eve. The units involved, special combat teams made up of former members of the 82nd Airborne.
Just for curiosity, how did you figure this is a job for old paratroopers? Why didn't you just get some regular heist guys?
For the best of reasons, Mr. Harmon. A man with a criminal record can't get near Las Vegas, much less the casinos.
Well, I guess that lets me out.
Don't be ridiculous. You know Hoodlum. You got no connection with the underworld.
Hoods are always mixed up with other hoods. Where there are hoods, there are stool pigeons. But with us, no stoolies, no leaks.
Now, you five guys working in the hotels, which hotels are you in?
Flamingo. The Sands.
Desert Inn. Riviera.
A scene from the 1960 film Ocean's 11. Sean Levy is the author of the book Rat Pack Confidential, which covers the years 1958 to 63. It's the story of how Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, Peter Lawford, and Joey Bishop became known as the Rat Pack, got connected with the mob and the Kennedy campaign, and epitomized some of the best and worst of show business. On and off stage, their behavior ranged from very entertaining to incredibly crude. Here's Sammy with Frank and Dino from a new CD featuring them live at the Sands in 1963.
This song has always held a very special spot in my heart because it's the first song I ever recorded. Hey there.
Yes?
I've never made a move.
You want to laugh, Sam? Go out and sit in the audience.
Hey there!
What the hell you want, Sam? Baby.
Run to you. You think someday she will come to you. Better forget her.
Good, Sam. What else do you want to sing?
I spoke with Sean Levy about his book Rat Pack Confidential in 1998. I asked him how the Rat Pack got its name.
There was a Rat Pack prior to the Sinatra Rat Pack. Humphrey Bogart and his cronies, including Sinatra, had been in Las Vegas for a kind of debauched weekend. They actually went to see Noel Coward at the Desert Inn. And Sinatra and Bogart and these folk were all there. David Niven, I believe, Judy Garland. And Lauren Bacall walked in on them after they'd been partying for a few days and said, "Geez, you all look like a Rat Pack." And a few nights later, she said it to them again, and this time they went through the motions of forming a society with this name, and they had, you know, official titles. They even had stationery. After Bogart's death, Sinatra sort of drew on that energy and put together his own coterie of friends. Some of Bogart's circle were in it, but mostly it was Sinatra's buddies. And the Rat Pack name sort of got dragged along. Frank always hated it, but the alternative was the Klan. And the Klan didn't sound too good when civil rights had started, so the Rat Pack they became. Years later, Frank dismissed it as that stupid phrase, but he could never shake it.
Let me run through some of the people who were in the Rat Pack and get you to briefly describe what their place in that group was, starting with Sinatra.
Sinatra was the padrone, the pope. They all worked for him. You know, he produced the movies that they made. He owned the record company. He owned the casino, or at least parts of the casino. And he was also the person who set the style. He chose the people. He showed them how to dress, how to order food at a restaurant. He was really the sort of the center of the universe for this group.
Dean Martin.
Dean was like Frank's blood brother. He was the only guy who could consistently tell Frank no when Frank wanted to party at 2 a.m. or when Frank wanted to go into some business deal. And, you know, Dean was a perfect foil for Frank on stage. He'd been Jerry Lewis's straight man, and then Frank became his. Dean was exquisitely funny.
Sammy Davis.
Sammy's the kid brother. You know, Frank always, in the best sense of the word, patronized minority artists. He always had black groups on the act with him. He always had black musicians in his band. And he knew Sammy from when Sammy was a teenager performing with his dad and uncle. So he became the little brother, and he, more than anyone, I think, slavishly imitated Frank's way of life, way of speech, way of dressing.
Peter Lawford.
Poor Peter. Peter was a bridge, you know, between Frank Sinatra and his circle and Jack Kennedy and his circle. Frank explicitly and deliberately made an alliance with Peter to get to the Kennedy campaign. And then when the Kennedys sort of washed their hands of Frank, Frank dumped Peter. So it was a pretty painful relationship for Lawford, I think, on both sides of the equation, because the Kennedys didn't really respect him as a man's man either.
Peter Lawford was married to one of John Kennedy's sisters.
That's right. And it was kind of an embarrassment, because he was a man whose movie career had sort of washed out, his TV career had washed out, and then he became known in the Sinatra household anyhow as the brother in Lawford. So it was not a position that, you know, demanding a lot of respect, you know, in and of itself.
Okay, and Joey Bishop, the comic.
Well, Joey was the comic, and he was sort of the MC when the Rat Pack performed together in Vegas and Miami, and he was a traffic cop on stage who kept the act going. And I think also he was kind of a beard who, you know, during those years anyhow, before the sort of darker sides of the whole era became known widely, I think Joey was sort of a way to say, hey, it's showbiz. Joey Bishop is here. What else could it be? This isn't a real life scene. This is an act.
What were some of the most famous shticks within the Rat Pack's stage act?
Oh, gosh. They would perform sort of a pastiche of a nightclub act. One of the three singers would come out and start to sing and be interrupted. Sometimes, you know, really coarsely. You know, it was Vegas. It was, you know, adult entertainment. And things that they said would be sort of outrageous to us now, say, in terms of race or ethnic identity or gender. Sammy, for instance, would get lifted up into the air by Dean or Frank, and they'd go to the mic and say, I'd like to thank the NAACP for this award. You know, we can't imagine laughing at that now, and it would just bring down the house. But they would bring a bar cart out and mix drinks. Dean would always say, you know, I'll make me another salad or something like this. Someone would start to sing a song, and the three or four others would just trample all over it. They worked always toward the same finale. When it was the entire Rat Pack, they sang The Birth of the Blues with special lyrics. And you even see Johnny Carson sing it with them in the 1965 Dismas House special. So it was a routine. It was about an hour and a half show that they could run to 2.5 hours if they were feeling spirited, you know, at the end of the night. Pretty corny old burlesque stuff, though. Nothing as penetrating as Lenny Bruce or Mort Saul.
You know, they made a lot of homophobic jokes and jokes about Jews and blacks and Italians. So they were putting down each other, and then also putting down people who were not represented on stage. I think that stuff doesn't play back very well right
no,
now.
No, it doesn't. And surely that's the sort of thing that people objected to, you know, as the 60s went on and people became more aware of the ways in which humor and language could be hurtful. I think that helped the Rat Pack fall from favor, that they were still, you know, Frank would tell Sammy to hurry up and finish the song "The Watermelon Was Getting Warm," you know, things like that. I mean, that just makes me cringe to see. And there's Sammy, you know, slapping his knee the way he does with the open mouth laugh. It's kind of a grisly sight in retrospect.
But it seemed to not bother them at the time.
Well, it didn't bother Frank and Dean at any rate. Sammy, in his autobiography, wrote about knowing that there was a double edge to the humor, but also knowing how Frank had always stood behind him and thinking, well, this is shtick. This is what we do. It's part of an act. His wife at the time, a Swedish actress by the name of Mai Britt, was very upset with Sammy's treatment at the hands of Frank and Dean, even though he always said to her, honey, it's in jest. They're stand-up guys. They don't mean it. She felt it was very demeaning, and she really couldn't make him see that.
The Rat Pack's artistic home was Vegas. What was the role of the Rat Pack in attracting people to Vegas and to in creating the identity of Vegas?
If you speak to old-timers in Vegas, they all credit the Rat Pack with kind of saving the town. In the mid-50s, after the first boom on the Strip, Vegas became built up very quickly. But the tourism wasn't matching the construction. People were still going to Havana to gamble and party. Miami was still a huge entertainment capital as well as a vacation capital. And as Sinatra became more and more associated with Las Vegas, he bought into the Sands Hotel. Dean Martin owned a share of the hotel. He played there more and more. I don't think it's a coincidence that the Rat Pack Summit, the appearance of the five big stars on the stage at the Sands, is roughly around the time that the hotels were nationalized in Havana. You know, Castro took the casinos away from their stateside owners, fellas like Meyer Lansky. And suddenly, there was this big tourist attraction in Las Vegas, the Rat Pack. And the town that had been sort of teetering, was overbuilt and had too many rooms and not enough guests, suddenly seemed a lot more stable. Within a few years, there were more hotels, there was a convention center, and the Rat Pack really are credited by the people in Las Vegas with sort of helping define that change, helping turn things for the city.
Was it just what they did on stage that attracted people to Vegas, or was it their partying and stuff off stage that also helped make the Vegas reputation?
I think it was a little of both. I think, you know, one of the allures of the act was that you didn't really think all the time that you were seeing an act, that it seemed like, hey, this is what they're really like. You know, Vegas was so small then. You know, we think of these monolithic hotels they have there today. The Sands had 200 rooms in 1960, and that was the most luxurious hotel on the Strip. So it was a very tiny place, and these guys would walk around the casino after they performed or on their way to performing. You know, there were no sort of security alleys for them to duck through the way there are in the large hotels today. And I think the idea you could go to Las Vegas and maybe Sammy would show up at the Riviera and get on stage with the lounge act drew a lot of people to the city.
My guest is Sean Levy, author of Rat Pack Confidential. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sean Levy, author of Rat Pack Confidential. What do you consider to be the end of the Rat Pack?
Well, there's the way I wrote about it is to take a period of time when they were working on a film together. Robin and the Seven Hoods was in production on November 22nd, 1963, when John Kennedy was killed. When that film came out the following August, the Beatles, who had never been in the United States prior to the beginning of the filming, had five top 10 hits. And there's the sea change right there. In about an 8 or 9 month span, the whole mystique of, you know, adults and a kind of licentious sort of ribbing lifestyle had been replaced by a very innocent seeming teenage idealism that, you know, Frank, Dean, Sammy, Peter, they couldn't compete with.
Of course, Sinatra still went on to have hits and to make some really good recordings.
Oh, they all did. Dean had his NBC TV series. Sammy was still years away from Candyman and, you know, his biggest hits. But they were playing to a smaller crowd. You know, I've written that they lost the main room and were playing in the lounge. The kids definitely took over the center stage, and they really have ever since. You know, no adult entertainers have consistently outsold youth acts in the music business ever since the arrival of the Beatles. And sort of, you know, in terms of who controls the cultural, you know, conversation, I think we still look to youth culture to this day.
How did writing your book affect your opinion of the Rat Pack? Did it change your mind about anybody?
Well, I particularly felt more and more empathy with Sammy Davis Jr. You know, in our time, he's, you know, something of a joke, and he ended badly. You know, he was hounded by the IRS. He was, you know, he suffered, you know, terrible ill health during the last year or so of his life, And he became kind of shorthand for showbiz insincerity and glitz and sleaze a lot of bad comedians, you know, made hay out of imitating him. A lot of good ones, too. But when you look at his story, you know, I always thought of him as the Jackie Robinson of showbiz. And you look at what he had to endure. You know, Las Vegas was not an integrated town during most of this Rat Pack period. And Sammy, as a result, was the first black entertainer to be allowed to stay on the Strip. The first black entertainer to be allowed to gamble in the hotels. And on like this. And, you know, we tend to think of him as this kind of little, you know, guy capering around there with Frank and Dean. But when he got off that stage, he was subject to a completely different kind of treatment from the rest of them. And I grew to admire his ability to sort of plow through that and, you know, sort of stay true to his intention of being, you know, a great entertainer and a great example to people who he hoped could follow him.
Sean Levy is the author of Rat Pack Confidential. I spoke with him in 1998 when the book was published.